As we've gone through the Sermon on the Mount, I have explained, and it bears repeating, that the Sermon on the Mount is countercultural. It is not in accordance with human nature, and the things that are commanded in the Sermon on the Mount do not come naturally. And so we are in verse 10 through 12 this morning, and I read in your hearing, "Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." And so these verses speak to persecution due to righteousness, or in other words, persecution on account of Jesus Christ. And so if a person wants to live like Christ, be a disciple of Christ, follow his example, or imitate Christ, then is persecuted for that manner of life. And so we need to be careful we understand what is written here and not make other assumptions. The persecution here is for righteousness, for following Christ. And it is not for religion as such. Because as we look around the world, there's a lot of persecution today on account of religion. To give you a few examples, in China, the Uyghurs have been put into camps by the government and are persecuted. And the persecution is so severe it's been labeled as genocide. These are Muslims, and they're seen as different from the majority Chinese. And of course, the Communist Party, which is in charge, is officially atheistic. Likewise, in Myanmar, the Rohingya Muslims have been persecuted. They've been driven out of the country into Bangladesh. They live in camps in Bangladesh in very severe poverty because this is a poor country in the first place. They scarcely have enough resources to take care of their own people, and they really cannot afford to take on a great quantity of refugees. Christians are persecuted in Africa with attacks on villages, kidnapping of school children. In Russia, the Jehovah's Witnesses were declared an extremist organization by the Russian Supreme Court in April of 2017. And since then, many witnesses have been tried or jailed. Now, this is persecution, and in some cases, very severe persecution. And time fails me to talk about the persecution against the Yazidis and other various sects throughout the Middle East, Baha'i religionists in Iran and so forth. But the persecution is severe. But let's ask a question. Can we say this is persecution for the sake of righteousness? The answer is no. This is persecution on behalf of a religious label by governments or groups which fear or dislike that particular label. Now, those under this label can be very zealous adherence to the faith. They can also be nominal believers. And so, just as you have your Christians who might go to church on Christmas and Easter and otherwise not concern themselves too much with church except such things as weddings or funerals, you also have nominal adherents in various other faiths, but they're under that label. I am a whatever. In fact, they might just follow the forms out of custom or ritual. Myanmar has decided to drive out the Muslims because a small percentage of them are terrorists, intent on causing trouble. So they said, we're not going to sort out the terrorists, we're just going to drive them all out. China and Russia are atheistic states that demand total obedience by their citizens. It's near to worship of the state or party. And so this demand leaves very little room for worship of anything else. In fact, in China, they're an equal opportunity persecutor. One day they'll persecute the Christians, another day they'll persecute the Uyghurs, another day they persecute the folks that are, you know, doing meditation out in the park. They don't like them either. Now, in Africa, the Islamic bands believe in the ancient maxim, Muhammad or the sword. And so they believe any Christian should be put to the sword. So now today, here, if the government came and demanded our membership records, which we keep, and then took all members and put them into jail, would this be persecution for righteousness? This brings it right home to us. Not necessarily. It would be persecution for our affiliation with a certain Baptist church. So, if we've seen that persecution for a certain religious label is not what this text is all about, neither is it about the religious fanatic, the obnoxious Christian, or the Christian that must have his way at all times and at all costs. Okay? We find this attitude inside churches. We find it in the general public. And these people, whoever they are going to face pushback. They're going to face opposition. But the problems are created by their approach and their attitude, not by their righteousness. It's a very important distinction. So, if we have the obnoxious Christian that turns off people by his approach and they don't want anything to do with him, that's not this. Because we can confidently say that this person is what? Neither meek, nor is he a peacemaker, which we read in the preceding verses. Anybody who has spent any time in church leadership can bring to mind the person with some certain conviction, something they like, something they dislike. But that conviction might not be broadly shared. But this individual wants his particular conviction not only universally shared, he wants it to become a test of fellowship. If you don't do this, you can't be a good Christian. This person is pretty quick going to get pushback from the church. This is not persecution, as identified in our text. Why not? Why not indeed? This person is poor in spirit. But unfortunately, he's blind to that fact. Our first verse says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." But this individual, demanding his own way, does not recognize his spiritual poverty. He proclaims himself rich by demanding that others believe and practice just as he does. He's more similar to the Pharisee at prayer than the publican, because the Pharisee in prayer praised himself and the publican said, "Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner." He went down to his house justified. He's not mourned over his poverty of spirit. And he's not meek. Rather, he's demanding. He's not merciful, for he has no mercy for people with a different point of view. So rather than being a peacemaker, because we see blessed are the peacemakers, he's likely to stir up strife. As such, I can't fit him into this text. That's a round peg in a square hole. Persecution, then, is not that which comes about by use of a broad label. You know, I don't like Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't like Buddhists. I don't like Muslims. I don't like Catholics. I don't like Presbyterians. But it comes from individual acts of the person who desires to follow Jesus, because those acts are a broad variance with the practice and the culture of that time and place. They stick out. They stand out. The person stands up. The Japanese ancient saying is, the nail that sticks up will be hammered down. And so, if you stick out, if you stand out, if you stand up, it's going to be noticed. Can't help but be noticed. Now, the culture desires conformity above all else. Okay? So if I go to the mall and walk down the hallway and want to go buy something, and I see some young women coming up the mall, they all got jeans with all kind of holes in them. When I got holes in my jeans, my mother patched them. She wouldn't let me wear them anymore. But now it's the fashion, which is the culture, which wants conformity. So not only one person wears them, most everybody wears them. Why? I don't know. But the culture desires conformity, and all societies have various rules and customs that people are supposed to conform to. The person who does not conform to these norms is different. He or she is the nail that sticks up. And the Sermon on the Mount is counter to these norms, which are mostly based on human nature. Persecution is a reaction to the person that is different. The hammering of the nail that sticks up. But it's individual rather than corporate. Also, it has many shades. Could be minor, they won't talk to me, they don't invite me, okay, they don't like me, or it can be extreme. Now, like all scripture, I like to say context is king. And there's a lot of mischief done by taking a verse out of context and trying to make it stand alone. The Bible wasn't originally written in verses. It was a convention that was started with the Geneva Bible. Originally, it was all written in paragraph form. So, we see that those who are poor in spirit and recognize it, those who mourn over sin in themselves and in their society, who are meek or gentle in their approach to man and God, those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, are merciful, pure at heart, and peacemakers. This is the group we're looking at. This is the subset of society, the subset of professing Christians, if you can hear that statement. They're contrary to human nature in their actions, and they'll always stand out because of this behavior. Now, in America, we have a strong degree of religious freedom, for which we're grateful. And this country has become tolerant of Christians. It's also true that Christians have become tolerant of this country and tolerant of this culture. And like the church in Corinth or the church in Crete, the culture of the surrounding community often comes into the church and it's accepted there. Wrongly. Wrongly. And so, for each and every Christian, there's going to be issues of commonly accepted practices that run contrary to the Christian faith and the commands of Christ. Look at Paul. He was talking to the Corinthians about dining in a pagan temple. We don't have that now. Or visiting the temple prostitutes. We don't have that now. But these things were so common in the Corinthian culture, they were everyday things that were accepted. You know, if you talk to someone, they say, everybody does that. But Paul said that in Christ, you are a new creature or a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. And so the new man lives in a different manner. I make one small example in the area of alcohol. Many an office has office parties, and it's a generally expected rule that there will be consumption there of alcohol. Okay? Sometimes more, sometimes less. The Christians who refuses to drink will soon find resentment because those who do imbibe will infer from his behavior that he thinks he's better than them. This causes peer pressure, increasing peer pressure to conform to the crowd. However, the Christian who endeavors to persevere will find eventually he comes out the other side. The stand will be accepted and even respected when it becomes clear that peer pressure is not going to have any effect. However, the Christian who succumbs and tries to go along to get along is going to damage his testimony because he has what? Accepted the cultural norm in order to conform. So in verse 12, we're advised to rejoice in persecution. Why would we ever do that? Is that countercultural or what? Persecution is not fun. But there are reasons behind this verse, just as there are reasons behind the other verses in the sermon. We're going to look at those reasons. Reason number one, knowledge. By reading these things, we obtain knowledge. Knowledge is not feelings. It's not emotion. Knowledge is a solid anchor in storms of life. Even the Apostle Paul said he was troubled, he was perplexed, persecuted, but he leaned on his faith, his knowledge of God to carry him through. Elsewhere he says he knows who he has believed, and he's persuaded that God is able. Identification, that's number two. Persecution proves that you're identified with Jesus the Messiah. Remember that when the early Christians were beaten for preaching in the name of Christ, they went their way rejoicing that they had been counted worthy to suffer shame for his name, and they kept right on preaching and teaching, even though they'd been warned to stop doing it. Don't teach anymore in that name. Have you ever had another person say to you, "I know you are a Christian," generally followed by some kind of a request, "I know you are a Christian, so, you know, why can't you do this for me, or why did you do that?" Or something along those lines. When they say that to you, this is identification. "Can't you help me? I know you are a Christian. Can you do this for me? I know you are a Christian." Please don't do that which is going to hurt me. "I know you are a Christian." This is identification. Or you can get, "What are you all about? There's something very different about you. What's your story?" This is a slightly more subtle identification, and it's quite likely from someone who's very ignorant about the Bible and in Christianity in general. And they reach out and they say, what's your story? What do you do? What do you believe? There's something here which I don't get." It's a recognition of identification. And so you are identified with him, because you're acting in a way that's counter-cultural. You're the nail that sticks up. Purification. That's number three. Persecution can purify the believer. Peter, 1 Peter 1, 6 through 8, says, "In this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials, that the proof of your faith, being more precious than gold, which is perishable, even though tested by fire, may be found to result in praise and glory and honor at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And though you have not seen him, you love him. And though you do not see him now, but believe in him, you greatly rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory." Joy inexpressible and full of glory. Having been locked up in prison and eventually being sentenced for execution, Peter knew something about trials. He advises that the Christian that faith is more valuable than gold. Early Christians refined the writings. Our canon we have today, this Bible, comes from early Christians. What they accepted as authoritative and the ordinance of the church, because they were under persecution. And so the canon that we have, what is accepted as authoritative, were what these early Christians decided, this is worth dying for. It's that valuable to us. And so that's one of the ways they separated the wheat from the chaff when it comes to the scriptures. Number four is light. Christians have been advised to let their light so shine that men will see their good works and glorify the Father in heaven. If you are living in peace and prosperity, rejoice. But there is little to separate you from the great mass of men. However, to exhibit joy in the midst of persecution is a showing of Christianity. The Christian church grows under persecution. The house church is growing in China under persecution. In Afghanistan, the Christian church, though small in comparison in the country, has grown in the last 20 years while the United States have been in there. Now that the United States has left, there will be extreme persecution of that church. But I fully expect it to grow under that persecution. We have a great mass of Christian martyrs over the century, and they've been persistent and patient in persecution, praying for their persecutors, preaching to their persecutors. I've read in church history that one of the disciples was crucified by being tied on a cross so he would last longer, and while he was dying, he was preaching to the ones that crucified him, gathered around the cross there, preaching as he approached death. We have Stephen, who was praying to forgive those who were stoning him as he was dying. Next point, reward. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. What exactly will the reward be? What will we get? Well, if Jesus said the reward will be great, it's beyond my perception and imagination to tell you what it'll be. When we read Hebrews 12:2, it's written that Jesus endured the cross for the joy that was set before him. He went and sat down at the right hand of God. So if you happen to be suffering persecution, if you are countercultural, if you are the nail that is sticking up and you're in the process of someone trying to hammer you down, you can be sure that Jesus is very near to you at that time. There can be victory in persecution. Peter said, if necessary, for a little while. And we see Jesus also telling people, if you're going to follow me, you should be counting the cost. Don't be like the man who was building a tower and he got halfway done and he couldn't finish because he didn't pay enough attention to getting prepared at the beginning. And so, is it all right to anticipate a reward? I would say yes. I would say yes. So if you happen to be encountering persecution, and granted, we're pretty spoiled here in this country. Christianity has been known and accepted in this country since the very beginning. But certainly it's not so everywhere. So if you happen to not be enduring persecution. Please pray for those who are. Christians in Afghanistan, the house church in China, Christians in the Middle East, where there used to be many Christians and now they're diminishing as they flee and emigrate out of there due to persecution. Christians in Africa, where their village might be attacked at any time. And so, if you're not suffering persecution, pray for those who are. Our friend Pastor Vijay in India was recently put into jail simply because he was holding a church service. Many were praying for him, and like Peter, he was let out the next day. But that hangs over his head because it could happen at any time. So remember the persecuted. And if you should happen to be that nail that sticks up, that someone wants to hammer down, remember that it says, "Rejoice and be glad, for your reward in heaven is great, for in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." We have our closing hymn, which is number 465 in his time.